Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of You're the Cure. I'm Dr. Ben Edwards. We have another great show for you today with Dr. Rebecca Jackson, who's the Chief Programs Officer for Brain Balance. So there's a local Brain Balance here in Lubbock. We're going to talk about that and what they offer and what they do. But also we're going to dive deeper into just this enormous problem in our children. You know, I have six kids. I love kids. I've always loved kids. I don't think I've ever told the audience this, but it was, I think, my sixth or seventh birthday. I asked for a baby doll. I wanted to have a baby doll. I love babies even at that age. And I was a babysitter. It was one of my first jobs, actually. But I've always loved kids. And so it hurts my heart when we have a lot of sick and hurting kids. And it really hurts my heart once 10 years ago when I learned about more nutrition-based, integrative, holistic approaches to diseases in general. And I really started diving deeper into the reality of just how sick our kids have become. Of course, adults too, but I diagnosed a seven-year-old in Garza County, and this was over 10 years ago when I was still practicing conventional family practice medicine, but a seven-year-old with type 2 diabetes. So there's definitely the physical component, like diabetes, but there is so much, and Dr. Jackson will get into this avalanche of mental illness and behavioral disorders, learning disorders, just brain stuff. It's incredible and sad. Anxiety, ADD, ADHD. You know, people hear me quote all the time, and this is old data. I think it was maybe 2016 or something. I saw a study, 54% of kids have a chronic disease. I mean, American kids are sick, and American adults are sick too, but the kids should be more resilient. I mean, they're young, they're kids. We shouldn't see this tidal wave of disease in kids. And we didn't see this 100 years ago. People all the time, they've heard me talk about Weston A. Price in the 1920s and 30s, traveled the world. But one of the things I don't often talk about is in his book, Nutrition and Physical Degeneration, he made a note to say, and not trying to be offensive here, I think the language he used, because he talked about primitives, but mental disease, a retardation of the mental growth and mental development. But he specifically noted he did not see any mental disease in these native populations that were eating and living ancestral diet and lifestyle. Of course, that includes movement and includes sunshine exposure. We've talked about that recently with some other guests about the importance of sun and what those wavelengths of light do, not only through our skin and to our mitochondria, through photoreceptors in the mitochondria, but through our eyeballs and our retina, our optic nerve to the brain, and melatonin and just all the neurotransmitters. We've had Natasha Campbell McBride on the show before, Gut and Psychology Syndrome, talking about ancestral eating in relationship to the microbiome, how you need to nourish your microbiome and those guts the bugs in your gut, and the impact that has on serotonin levels and dopamine and melatonin and so many of the neurotransmitters coming out of the gut. So my point is diet and lifestyle things have changed over the past 100 years. There's a reason for anxiety and depression and schizophrenia and autism and ADD and ADHD and bipolar and these different things. And it's multifactorial, but we can't just say it's your genes only, or it's just, you know, some disease that randomly is dropping on your kid out of nowhere. No, there's root causes. There's reasons to this, for this, these symptoms. And unfortunately, and God bless the doctors who are trying, but the MDs and the DOs who are trained in conventional medical model here in the United States are trained in a very narrow, limited way, just as we are with everything. Diabetes and heart failure and cancer, we've talked about our limited training, limited toolbox. So parents, we're coming directly to you. We're going to bypass that medical system, talk to you directly, because you're probably reaching out to your doctor. And even though they're highly educated, very intelligent, well-trained, they're narrowly trained. And they may not understand, or even if they understand, they may not be able to give specific guidance. I mean, probably moms and dads, you know intuitively, if your kid's having trouble, that probably the food, the preservatives and the food coloring and the sugars and all the processed food is probably contributing. And your doctor may say that too. But specifically how, and what do I do to get out of that, and give me a program and give me some help and give me a lifeline and point me to some resources that where people can surround me and help my kiddo. We're all overwhelmed with too much to do, with too many distractions, with just jobs, paying for inflation and taxes and everything else. It's hard. But there are resources, and there's a community here to help you. And we're blessed to have Brain Balance in Lubbock as one of those resources to come alongside you as a parent. So we'll get into that later, but I need to quit talking because we have limited time. We've got Dr. Rebecca Jackson with us today. I want to intro her real quick. Got a bio here. Dr. Jackson comes as the role, as I mentioned, Chief Program Officer for Brain Balance, as an industry authority on the topics of development, cognition, and brain health. She has over 15 years of experience at Brain Balance, working with both kids and adults. Her depth of knowledge and passion comes from a strong foundation of education, research, and years of experience in driving change in the brain that translates to improvements throughout life. Dr. Jackson has published research on the topics of improving cognition, development, and well-being. She's a frequent media expert guest. She's an author of a new book, Back on Track, A Practical Guide to Help Kids of All Ages Thrive. Prior to joining the Brain Balance corporate team, Dr. Jackson served as the executive director of three Brain Balance centers, personally overseeing more than 1,000 students progress through the Brain Balance program. She's a graduate of Life University as a doctor of chiropractic in 2001, holds additional certifications in board-certified cognitive specialist, and as a mindset safety management behavioral trainer. And she's passionate about creating and delivering programs that increase awareness, understanding, and changes in the lives of kids and adults seeking to improve their health and their lives. Dr. Jackson, welcome to the program. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. And Dr. Bent, I have to tell you, listening to you frame up and introduce the topic that we're here to talk about today, it gave me goosebumps. This is the world I've lived in for the past 15 years, so this knowledge and information isn't new. But what you said is so spot on and so critical, where we're faced with more kids than ever struggling today. And we have had lifestyle and community and world changes that have taken place over the last 100 years. But then those changes, from my perspective, were really accelerated over the past few years with the pandemic, where even more changes entered our lives. And we're seeing that have a direct impact on the development of our kids. And nutrition is absolutely critical to brain growth and development. If you don't have the correct nutrients, the brain doesn't have the building blocks to optimize that development. But we're not talking about development enough in the conversation. Development is a key factor for brain health at every age. And when there's complications in development, it just makes life harder. And so this is a topic that I'm so excited and passionate to talk about, because it is critical. And parents are left to forge a path on their own when they've got a struggling child and they're looking to physicians and teachers and educators and professionals and friends for guidance. There's not always a clear-cut path forward. And all too often, the traditional options, while they're necessary and can be very helpful, they're not always the answer for all kids. And if they're not, parents are left feeling like, oh my gosh, I feel stuck. Where do I go from here? And so educating parents to know that change is possible and how to create change is what we're here to talk about today.
Yeah, I could not agree more. Give us a little background for the listeners, kind of get to know you personally more, kind of where you've come from and how you've gotten to where you are today.
Sure. You know, had I planned to land where I am today, I don't think I could have planned it out, but here I am. From the time I was in third grade, I was fascinated by the body and anatomy. I learned that you could stand on your head and still swallow in spite of gravity. And that just blew my mind. So the peristaltic ways of the esophagus. So I knew from early on that I wanted to be a doctor. I wanted to be a part of that. But then I had an experience through high school and into college where my grandmother, who was a role model and somebody I really looked up to, she was a university professor in the child psychology department in Minnesota, you know, years ago when females often didn't work out of the house. And so I just always somebody I really looked up to. But she had a stroke, and there was a long period of time where she was in the hospital, and I watched this process of medicating for a symptom And then that medication would create additional symptoms and side effects. And then I just watched this process of layering on medication after medication. And I didn't understand what I was watching, but I didn't love the environment of the hospital. It was freezing cold. I didn't like the smell. I didn't like what I was seeing, but I didn't know how to do anything different. And that's ultimately what led me to chiropractic, was that understanding of what excites me is, what can I do on the preventative side? What can I do to understand why I'm seeing what I'm seeing? And, you know, I'm the person that if I have a headache, I'm going to, before I pop the Advil, I'm going to stop and think, did I get enough sleep? Am I hydrated? You know, I want to know if I have a headache, there's a reason. And if I can address that underlying reason, then I don't need the Band-Aid for the symptom. So I really resonated with that philosophy and really liked the idea of focusing more on health and wellness and prevention. And I spent a decade in that space and had a practice and absolutely loved it. And then wanted to be a mom that stayed home with my kids. So when my husband's job moved us out of town at a time where our first child was born, I shifted gears to be an at-home mom. But during that time, I was missing the mental engagement and stimulation, and I'm a lifelong student. So I started taking classes in the neurology of pediatric development. I was a new mom, and so I wanted to learn everything I could about development. And the very first course I took was the neurology of dyslexia. And my mom, who was an elementary school psychologist at the time, I would call her every day after class and say, Mom, what are the schools doing about this? How are the schools approaching this? How are the schools approaching ADHD or behavioral pieces? And her response was, the schools have the tools that they have. And she felt like she spent a career putting Band-Aids on things, where she would say if a student came to her in kindergarten with a certain struggle, that student would also often have that same struggle as they were exiting the school system. It just looked different at different ages. So she felt like she spent her career supporting and putting strategies in place, but not truly driving change. And so when I started to learn more about the brain and started to understand that this isn't common knowledge that everyone has, these aren't tools and resources that are yet baked into our school systems and our processes, I was driven. I couldn't wait until my kids were school age to start working again. I really felt so energized and excited by the information that I wanted to be a part of the solution and a part of guidance and help for families. So that's how I went from stay-at-home mom to brain balance.
Wow.
And here I am today.
Well, that's awesome. And I can't help to take a moment whenever I can find a moment to reiterate this point to our audience, because we get plenty of bombardment of conventional medical mindset through the media and just our culture in general in these institutions. And again, well-meaning people in the institutions, I believe, but narrowly trained. Just want to remind the listeners that pre-1910-ish, before the Flexner Report came out, where Abraham Flexner recommended to Carnegie and Rockefeller, John D. Rockefeller, that we should standardize healthcare education, medical education, standardize it, because there's too many different variables, too many different curriculum, too many different ways that these healers out in the world are being trained, and they decided to standardize it to the allopathic model, which translated to a pharmaceutical, chemical-based approach to symptom treatment, because your disease is never a deficiency of that pharmaceutical. Your heartburn is not a deficiency of Nexium. Your migraine headache is not a deficiency of Imitrexure. Your heart disease is not from deficiency of Lipitor. There's never a pharmaceutical deficiency. Not that there can't be a time and place for that Band-Aid, as Dr. Jackson has even alluded to, but just know that that was 110 years ago is when all that started. And pre that, all healing arts, chiropractic, herbalist, naturopathic, you name it, all the healing arts worked with the body's innate natural design to fix itself, to maintain itself, to heal itself, to repair itself. The body's designed to function normally. It's an amazing design. And so all the healing arts worked with that design, just came alongside it and encouraged it and helped it along until the Flexner Report. And then they actually tried to outlaw some of these other healing arts and marginalize them and even throw some folks in jail over these things. And to this day, we're still in that model, unfortunately. And getting the worst health outcomes. How do 50%+ of kids have a chronic disease? Because we're putting Band-Aids forever, just like Dr. Jackson's mom said. They enter the school in kindergarten, they exit their senior year of high school. Really, it's the same problem. The root cause was never addressed. So I always like to just hammer that home, that the conventional system has been there for 100 years, producing the worst outcomes. And I would submit because we're only chasing these symptoms around with pharmaceuticals. Again, time and place for it, but let's go deeper. So Dr. Jackson, you're studying, you're gaining some certifications, your kids are getting into school age where you can start to get back in there. So kind of take it from there. Where'd you end up and how'd you start? What did you go straight in with the Brain Balance folks, or talk more about what you did next?
Sure. So I considered starting in private practice. I had the knowledge, the tools, I had built and sold practices. But the more my husband and I learned about Brain Balance, the more it didn't make sense to recreate the wheel, where there's a system and a progression. We've got a centralized database, so we get to learn not student by student, but we get to learn on a grander scale. And so just the mission and focus and drive of the company and the outcomes that they were seeing just really, again, it resonated with me. It was exciting to me. So my husband and I did decide to join the Brain Balance system. And as you mentioned in my intro, we owned and ran 3 centers in the Southeast. And that was such a tremendous time of learning at that time my kids were little. So I didn't know what it looked like. I hadn't lived it to see an 8-year-old who was struggling with impulse control and emotional regulation. And so much of my learning came from getting to know these families and seeing the stress and toll it takes on the entire family. When you have a child that's struggling with impulse control and emotional regulation, and as a parent, you're getting phone calls from school and disruptions at play dates, and maybe there's disagreement in parenting styles between the parenting partners and spouses, and then the child themselves, who, they're constantly, maybe their name's being called out in class all day. And so all of a sudden, the information that I was learning in the classroom about the brain and when healthy development goes off track, what that looks like, where there's a greater struggle for a child in various areas, it was working with the families that brought that to life for me to see, what does that really look like? What does that mean for that child, for that family, for that classroom? And really, again, it just continued to show me more and more there's a need where parents feel stuck. As parents, we know our kids better than anyone. We've got that sense when something, your child's capable of more, or something's holding them back. But just knowing what to do to help and support, and, talking about the narrow focus of scope, that's something that I've seen over and over. And, there's pluses and minuses that go with it. I love when somebody's an expert in something where they've got a deep, deep knowledge. But I do see this, what I always refer to as a siloed approach, where if a child is struggling with school, the first approach tends to be tutoring. Let's spend more time reviewing the same concept. And there's a time and a place for tutoring. But if that child is struggling with learning because of attention, working memory, because their eyes aren't tracking as they're reading, so they're missing words and content and information, spending more time reviewing the content isn't always the most efficient way to support that child. Same thing, Sarah McDowell, who's the owner of the Lubbock Center, her background is a licensed professional counselor. And how she came to Brain Balance is she worked with a lot of kids and families. And while counseling was really, really effective and helpful for many of the kids that she worked with, she was finding it wasn't as effective for all kids. So, and she started realizing that if a child has aspects of immaturity and development, this child had a harder time taking in and applying what they were learning and counseling. And so she started to look into, okay, for these kids that she's not helping as effectively, what can be done? So I think, there is often that very siloed approach, but the reality is nothing in the brain happens in isolation. each nerve in the brain can connect with up to 1,000 other nerves. And so if you have a complication in one area, it's not going to impact one thing. There is going to be a much more global impact. So the child that struggles with sustaining attention is also going to have challenges in other areas. And so we need to take a whole child, whole person approach to support the whole rather than focusing on the symptom.
Yeah. So we've got maybe 7 or 8 minutes until the break. I think it might be a good time. Can you give a little more of the detail if someone's would like to seek out Brain Balance to partner with them and helping their kiddo out? You know, what type of symptoms typically do these kids have that might come to Brain Balance, and kind of overview of what the program looks like or entails?
Sure. At Brain Balance, we work with a really wide range of child and adult. About 50% of the individuals that we work with do come to us with a label or a diagnosis. And that label or diagnosis may be ADHD, anxiety, sensory processing, learning disability, autism. The other 50% don't have a label or a diagnosis. So maybe there's a struggle or a challenge there, but it's not enough to warrant a label or a diagnosis. Or maybe the parent's wanting to work hard to do everything they can first so that perhaps down the road their child doesn't qualify for that label or diagnosis. So at Brain Balance, we're not looking at things through the lens of that label or diagnosis. Again, we want to look at the whole person, the whole child. That being said, the number one symptom or concern that we see is attention. But I think it's important to note attention impacts everything. And it's one of our most fragile resources in that it's one of the last things to develop fully. And it's one of the most susceptible. So when we're tired, when we're stressed, when we're hungry, through aging, our attention capabilities are impacted. So they're fragile, they're important. And so whether an individual has ADHD or sensory processing or anxiety, we do see attention impacted. So we work with a broad range, and our focus is understanding what we can do to strengthen the networks and pathways in the brain that support those functions. So you don't get better at attention by practicing attention. Kids naturally should develop better attention capabilities over time through development. So we're backing up to say, are there areas of deficit in foundational development so that that normal trajectory, that healthy trajectory of development, we can get that back on track. And we're able to do that through a multimodal layered approach where we're engaging lots of different sensory regions of the brain while doing physical and engaging activities that work on core muscles and coordination and timing. And then we do a lot with the visual system in terms of coordination of eye movements and visual processing and perception, as well as auditory processing.
Okay. So what's a week or a day? How often do these kiddos come in, and kind of what's the program look like from a standpoint of how many weeks, months, years,
outlook? It's important to us at Brain Balance. We have a distinct starting and end point. And so this is a program where it's not ongoing. We start with an assessment. That assessment usually takes about 2 hours, and we're able to do an assessment in person with both kids and adults, as well as remote. So if you live too far away from a center to be able to come in, we're able to do a remote assessment via computer as well. Then from there, it depends on your combination of strengths and weaknesses. So the shortest program duration we do is 3 months, and it's because we don't want to just fire up the brain in the short term. We want to strengthen pathways and networks in the brain that are going to sustain over time. And that takes enough repetition to build and strengthen a pathway. So we want to see that once you're completed the Brain Balance program, that the gains persist over time. And so 3 months is the shortest program. And we offer programs that are on site in centers. We've got locations all across the country, including the center in Lubbock, Texas. And again, we also offer hybrid and remote programs. So you can come in 1, 2, or 3 days a week to the center. You can do it all remote, and you work with both kids and adults.
Okay, awesome. What's the website where people can learn more?
Brainbalance.com.
All right. Well, we're up against the break. We are visiting with Dr. Rebecca Jackson. And when we get back, we're going to talk about her new book and also talk more about some of her research and just what she's passionate about. So y'all stick with us. As always, this show will be archived on our website, veritasmedical.com, under the resource tab on the podcast archive page. Also, it'll be on iTunes under You're the Cure. I'm Dr. Ben Edwards. You are the cure. Stick with us. We will be right back with Dr. Rebecca Jackson. Welcome back, everybody. Dr. Ben Edwards here. VeritasMedical.com is where you'll find this show archived. Also, just a quick announcement. I don't have the produce list at the Merck, but these local farmers and growers and gardeners continue to supply us with some great local vine-ripened produce. So y'all can get down to the Merck and check that out. Follow us on social media. We have ongoing classes all the time at the Merck. And if you're a CEO or HR department person in your company, we do offer a corporate wellness program where you get a customized Veritas blood panel analysis done. We draw your blood and then we look at certain markers that conventional doctors may not look at. We're looking for signs of inflammation in the body, including inflamed cholesterol. Just the total and LDL really aren't that predictive of heart disease, but inflammation is. So we look at the blood work in a unique and different way, and then we have a written program we will give to each of your employees on how to change their diet and lifestyle to try to improve those inflammatory markers. And we've got a lot of content and education that goes into that program. So y'all can just reach out, info@veritasmedical.com, if you want more information on that. Okay, we're back with Dr. Rebecca Jackson, author of her new book, Back on Track, A Practical Guide to Help Kids of All Ages Thrive. Dr. Jackson, let's talk about the book and maybe your motivation for writing the book and why now. I know there's a lot going on. You mentioned at the beginning of the show, the last few years with COVID in particular. And I know I read a study recently, and I forget the age cutoff, but it was in young people. The number one chief complaint of why they're seeking out a doctor is for anxiety. And I think everyone understands through the pandemic, there were lots of unintended consequences as far as our isolation, social distancing, and fear, so many ramifications to our mental health and kids in particular. I just can't even imagine being a first, second grader, you know, impressionable ages and masking and the social distancing and all of it. I just can't imagine. But we've seen just this avalanche of mental health since then. But talk to us about the book and your motivation for that and why you're coming out with that now, and then about the book and what are the take-home messages from the book?
Yeah, the why now is I couldn't not. What I was seeing through the pandemic is we were already receiving an overwhelming amount of inquiries from parents reaching out saying, do you help with this? What about this? How do you help these things? And then we saw an increase in those demands and concerns throughout the pandemic. And we saw that firsthand at Brain Balance in what parents were calling in, talking about with concerns and challenges. And we also see it in the data and the statistics. We know that there was an increase in ADHD diagnosis through this time in both kids and adults. There was an increase in medication usage, those already diagnosed. They were taking higher levels of medication during this time, and then more new people taking medication. And we saw those increases in anxiety, in depression, in ADHD, and we're not, you know, data is still continuing to come out, but we're not seeing those numbers go back down. And from my perspective, it was that listening to the parents' concern, parents were asking why, what's going on, what can I do to help? They could describe the symptom, but not the why. And there was, you know, there's thoughts, right? There's the stress, there's the unknown, but why is my child now struggling so much? And the news headlines for years have been dominated by the negative, ADHD shortage, academic achievement gaps, gapping out and hitting our low socioeconomic populations even harder. There was just this domination in the news of the negative and the problems, which is, you know, I do understand that tends to be how news goes, but I was tired of sitting back and listening to the negative and not hearing guidance and solutions. And certainly there's no one silver bullet that does all things. And I don't believe I'm the total solution for anything, but I was tired of waiting for guidance and hope. And so felt like I needed to contribute to that conversation if I was frustrated with the conversation not happening. And so I wanted to provide a tool to give parents a better understanding as to why reducing sensory exposure, reducing physical activity, changing the way kids were eating because we were functioning from home all day, every day, why that has a direct impact on development, brain health, and well-being. And I think it's important to note, any time of prolonged stress and change is really draining and fatiguing on the brain. When the brain has run out of resources, it makes it harder for us to use the skills and abilities we have. And certainly we experienced that through the pandemic. But it's important for parents to know there's things that can be done on a daily basis to support a child's abilities. And then there's things that can be done big picture to jumpstart that development, to get things back on track so that life isn't as hard. And I think a great way that helps parents understand this is when we think about ADHD, one of the things we've learned through research is with ADHD, there are aspects of the brain that are about 30% immature, 30% behind peers. So what that can look like is if I have a 10-year-old sitting in a fifth grade classroom, that 10-year-old might be brilliant and just a charismatic, amazing kid. But this amazing kid might have aspects of development that are more on par with a 7-year-old. So if you think about what would it look like if I put a second grader in a fifth grade classroom and ask them to maintain attention, to handle themselves when they're frustrated and upset, to interact with their peers, those are things that are going to make it harder for that child to do. So we want to work to strengthen the brain, to mature that development. So then we get to have 10-year-old expectations for that 10-year-old sitting in that fifth grade classroom. So the why now was I wanted to equip parents with a better understanding as to how those changes impacted us, knowing that all of us, kids and adults, are going to face future times of stress. Hopefully it's not another pandemic, but life presents stress and challenges and change throughout. And so understanding the toll and impact it has on the brain and understanding what we can do daily to support and understanding what we can do in a bigger way through programs like Brain Balance to really get development back on track in a big way.
Yeah. So talk to us about the different aspects from your experience and opinion and research, and I'm sure it's different every kid probably. Some people really hone in on the nutrition. Others really hone in on you just need to get outside and play and run and tumble and the physical side of things. Or chiropractic, you know, when there's misalignment of stuff, of the skeletal system. Do you see it just a really balanced thing? Do you see kiddos who it's 90% one way or 90% another way?
You know, each child is unique and different. To me, each child is a puzzle where all of those pieces are critical. I know you talk about, I look at things through five pillars that are similar but slightly different. But to me, it's all about brain health. And our brain health dictates our ability to pay attention, to regulate our mood and behaviors, to perform at our best, and to be our best selves. So one of the main detriments of brain health is development. But you could have development that's on track, and if you don't have healthy nutrition on top of it, it's going to be harder for that brain to develop on track. And then if we've got, you know, an optimized brain that's living on processed foods and high amounts of sugar, that's going to interfere with that child being the best version of themselves. And so that was one of my challenges in writing the book, is I think each one of those pieces is equally important. So to me, when I look at, and I could write an entire book about each one of the topics, So it is so important to have that combination of physical movement. What physical movement does for activating and engaging the brain and utilizing networks and pathways throughout the brain lays the foundation for higher level development. I always say an organized body is an organized brain, and an organized brain is necessary for success in work and school. And so we don't start with high level thinking. We start with simple movements that build in complexity over time that lay the groundwork for our brain to be able to use these higher level networks. So the movement is critical. Sensory input is critical. Our sensory processing is how we interact and engage with the world. So if I can't trust what my senses are providing me in terms of information, that's going to have a negative impact on my attention. It's going to create higher levels of stress and anxiety. I'm going to miss information in the classroom. And so getting variety and lots of purposeful sensory input is key. We also really need to look at our technology usage. And that's something that for our kids from infants through teens just went through the roof during the pandemic time and hasn't returned back down to pre-pandemic levels. And understanding how technology usage, it's not bad, but we need to find a healthy balance. So we need to find that balance between technology and movement, because it can be very fatiguing on the brain, and a tired brain is going to have a harder time paying attention and managing mood and emotions. And then what we eat. And so I look at those domains as sensory, motor, social, emotional, cognitive, and behavioral. And we need healthy nutrition to support all of that.
Yeah. On the technology side, I was just having a conversation with a dad the other day about video games, and how it, just from a layman's perspective, he was talking about, you know, the change in his kid. Like, he said, this video game is like the programmer or the developer of the game has some secret knowledge of the brain in these developing kiddos, and they're like getting a portal into their brain and it changing the kids. I mean, yeah. Distinct behavioral changes, but in video games are just so common. I mean, even in adults, yep. Grown men play yep. video games for hours on end. Do you have research on that or thoughts on that, or is that addressed in your line of work?
It is addressed. We can't talk about well-being and brain health without having a conversation about technology. And I always want to be careful. I don't want to vilify it. It is a benefit to our lives in a lot of ways, and it's the reality of our society. But again, understanding healthy ways to utilize it and balance it. And you're absolutely right that the game developers, they have a deep level and understanding of neurology. They know how to trigger the reward system in the brain. And a question that I get from parents all the time is, why can my kids sit for hours playing a game, but I can't get them to sit for 20 minutes and do math? And the parents then feel like, oh, it's because they just don't care. They're not trying. But it's important for parents to understand the type of attention that we're using for homework is a completely different thing than the type of attention being used for video games. We call it both attention, but really it should be two totally different words so that we're not confusing the two. In order to sit and do homework, you need sustained attention, the ability to maintain attention on a task or goal for a long period of time, that ability to block out distractions and continue to work without a reward. That kind of attention takes a fair amount of energy. It's a limited resource where we can only use it for so long, and that duration is going to be tied to your development. Then if we flip it and talk about the type of attention that's used for video games, playing 2 hours of video games is not 2 hours of sustained attention. So it's not, again, not the same attention as what we're doing for homework. This type of attention is a micro burst of attention. It might be a 7-second increment of attention, a 30-second increment of attention. This is hyper-focused attention that then is hit with a reward. There's a dopamine trigger in the brain. So then our brain feels good and it wants more of that reward. So I'm going to double down and I'm going to do a micro burst of attention again. So the video game developers have learned how frequent do we need to have a reward in order for you to re-engage your hyper attention to stay focused? So I think of that type of attention as reward-driven attention, and we strengthen what we utilize. So when we have a student that's spending, you know, 3 hours a night playing a particular video game, they are strengthening their reward-driven attention pathways. That's not going to help them in that ability to sit in a high school class for 8 hours a day and pay attention and then come home and do homework. So again, it's finding that balance, and it's coming to our kids to say, hey, I'm going to change the rules at home because I've learned more information. And so because I know more, it's okay. We're going to keep the video game playing to maybe on the weekends, and then we're going to balance it with physical activity before and after, and then making sure that we're carving time each day for sustained attention. So it's just, it's important to know the differences and to know that reward-driven attention, that micro burst of really heightened focus, when that's happening, we lose sense of time. And so we're so hyper-focused that we're really unaware of everything happening around us. And so that's part of why it's so easy to get sucked into TikTok or YouTube on your phone. And before you know it, 2 hours have gone by. It's because of the what's happening in the brain, you lose time relevance. But it's also important to know, because it's a hyper-focus, it requires a ton of resources, which means when you're done, the brain's going to be more fatigued, and a tired brain is a negative brain. So as a parent, if you don't want negative behaviors from your child, allowing 2 hours of gameplay is almost a guarantee that you're going to have more in the way of pushback, challenging behaviors when they get off that device.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that explanation. I get that question a lot. My next question, I don't want to put you on the spot, and I did not prep you for this, and it's a sensitive topic. potentially inflammatory topic, but it's front and center, and I actually had a pediatrician comment the other day, I've mentioned this before on the show, that he hates the COVID-19 injection because, and he personally took it, and I think even in his practice distributes it, but the reason he hated it so much because he has so many parents questioning the routine vaccine schedule because of that one injection. My point's not get into vaccine versus anti-vaccine discussion. We've done that on the show plenty of times. We have a whole section on that on our website. You can, if you're a listener, you want to go listen to all that. Pros and cons of any medical procedure should be considered. Risk and benefit should be considered. My question is in regards to, because we get this more and more and more, mamas are calling us. We have a lot of mamas who are waking up to stewardship of their body, nutritionally, exercise-wise, sunshine-wise, all of it, all the four pillars. And they want to prepare themselves fertility-wise, because infertility is just through the roof. We're getting infertility calls a lot. So people are looking to be preventative. They're looking to be proactive. They're looking to get to root causes. They're wanting to have a healthy body to grow their baby in, so their brain will develop. That baby's brain will develop. But then postpartum. So I'm talking the whole gamut from, you know, C-section versus vaginal deliveries, midwifery versus, you know, conventional obstetrics, and the data that shows, you know, you have better outcomes here and better outcomes there. But that does include potential neuroinflammation that could come from what's being called now hyper vaccination, too early, too often, too much. What about a customized schedule? So again, that's a whole nother can of worms. I don't want to put you on the spot or say that you're speaking for brain balance versus personally, or if that's better just to avoid it. But what I'm getting at, really, I guess my question is for mamas, or expectant mamas, or planning to be a mama, and they're trying to set up that baby for the best brain development possible. You know, what would you say to them just in general on so that actually they wouldn't need to go to brain balance, you know, from a preventative standpoint?
That's the goal. Yeah. There's, I think, several key things to keep in mind is, you know, going back to fertility and at that time while you're pregnant, both parents' health, we're learning more and more, is really relevant and important. It's not just the mom, who's, you know, carrying our children for 9 months within us, but the dad's health is important and relevant as well. And so your state of health prior to conception is important. And part of that is, as you mentioned, inflammation. If autoimmune conditions are present, that's going to create complications and create reactions in the body. And then the importance of movement and nutrition throughout pregnancy is then that's actually when you're up and active, that's creating movement for the infant in utero. And then when that baby is born, the importance of movement and creating sensory experiences and opportunities. I cover that in my book. And there's a couple of things I'm really excited about in the book is the book does look at developmental milestones from birth through age 18 so that you can understand where your child is. And there's a starting point for everyone. And so regardless of their age, and you know, we see a lot of developmental milestone information for kids from in utero through about age 2. And then there's a lot of talk of gross motor milestones, but we don't talk as much about what are the learning milestones? What are the social emotional milestones? What is anxiety? There are times in life where anxiety is a part of typical development, but it shouldn't persist for longer. So knowing from day one, if you're a brand new parent with an infant, there are things that you can be doing on a daily basis. And really the simple answer is the importance of physical activity, sensory input, healthy nutrition, rest. Those are all contributing factors to overall brain health and wellness.
Yeah. Well said. Building resiliency in the body is oftentimes where I go with parents and just patients in general. If you build that resiliency, the body's designed to take some hits and take oxidative stress and take the pollution and all the things, Wi-Fi, EMFs, I mean, so much. And we want to try to steward and mitigate as much of the direct insult as possible, but the focus on building that in resiliency and built-in innate ability to defend itself and to fix itself. We've got, maybe 9 or 10 minutes left, Dr. Jackson. Give your best sales pitch on the book as far as maybe take-home message. Who would want to read it? Why would they want to read it? What would they expect, to learn when they read
it? This book is for every parent or professional that works with kids. What I have learned through my time at Brain Balance and the research that I've published is that change is possible. And so no matter how stuck you're feeling, if you have a concern or a worry, trust your gut, trust your instinct. Don't sit back and wait for others to point it out. And know that change is possible. And I love that you brought resilience into the conversation because resilience also impacts our mood and our ability to pay attention. And what I know is when there's developmental immaturities present, it makes life harder. So the child has to work harder to stay on task and pay attention, work harder to try to remember to turn in their assignment that they completed, but it never made it out of their backpack. So the stronger the brain is, the better connected. That makes the brain faster, stronger, more efficient, better endurance. And it also allows for recovery faster. So it builds a more resilient brain when it's well connected. And again, change is possible. So going back to that underlying foundation changes and has an impact on whole brain connectivity. So when we work by strengthening the underlying foundation, we see gains and improvements in all the domains that we talked about, in cognition, which is our ability to pay attention, to remember information, to plan and execute, to process information. We see changes in our social emotional abilities. So how we handle stress and frustration and upset, how we engage and communicate and connect with peers to build relationships that provide so much depth and meaning and happiness and joy in our lives. It is our sensory perception for how we take in and engage with the world, and then those motor pieces that support it. And so if a parent sees a concern in any one of those areas, it can be a red flag that there's aspects of development that are off track. And know that if there's a concern in one area, the likelihood of impact in others is high. But again, by strengthening that foundation, we see that whole child, whole brain impact. And we see it with kids and adults. You know, with adults, we don't think about how an adult's development contributed to their executive functions, to their stress and emotional management. But again, if parts of the brain aren't as strong, fast, efficient, and have endurance the way others do, it can be harder to not lose your temper when you're frustrated or upset, harder to stay on task, harder to organize and execute, which can really hold back intelligence and passion and all of these great inner strengths and abilities. So know that change is possible. And so for anybody that has somebody that they want to help and support, whether it's themselves or a child, the book is going to give a deeper understanding as to why you're seeing what you're seeing and arm you with knowledge and information to drive things forward. And then the book will never be a replacement for a program. If development has gone off track and you are seeing concerns, know that there are tools to drive change. Our traditional options of medication and therapy, those things are critical and necessary and needed, but parents need to have more tools at their disposal. And that's what we're here to help with.
Yep. Awesome. Real quick, we have just a few more minutes. For families, parents that have a kiddo who's maybe suffering, you know, from something really, really severe, more significant, and I'm thinking, you know, like an autism spectrum, but severe, maybe nonverbal and not real functional, or a cerebral palsy kiddo, or maybe a traumatic brain injury with significant limitations in their ability and their functioning. Is there, would those be appropriate candidates for brain balance or not so much? Is there a limit, I guess is what I'm saying, for what your program is kind of designed for, set up for?
Possibly. And that's where starting with that assessment is so important, is we're looking to see, are there's a fit and readiness for the program to be able to really truly benefit from the program. And our assessment allows us to see if a student or individual is ready for the program. And if they're not, that's where the book can be a great asset or tool, because there is a starting point for everyone. And change can look different for everyone, but there are things that you can do. I will say, you know, some of our larger limitations at this point, and hopefully we'll continue to learn and grow and evolve over time, but we're not able to change a genetic condition. So we can't change DNA. We can change the development that's layered on top of that. And so, you know, if an individual has an underlying genetic condition, we're not able to change genetics. Right. But if there's other concerns that impact neurodevelopment, so if there's neurodivergence in many ways, we're able to help. And again, we're not the right fit for all people, but the brain is highly, highly complex. And if there's a chain of events where we see things are behind age appropriate, that gives us an opportunity to really build and strengthen the brain to drive outcomes.
Yeah, cool. Well, thank you so much for your time and your expertise and your passion for helping these kids out. And I want to remind everyone, Sarah McDowell here locally in Lubbock in the Brain Balance Center here, just they do amazing work. And I recommend and endorse that facility. And even more so now after spending the hour with Dr. Rebecca Jackson. I look forward to Rebecca having your book available. Again, everybody, Back on Track, the name of the book, Back on Track, A Practical Guide to Help Kids of All Ages Thrive. I mean, I'm assuming, Dr. Jackson, that'll be on all the typical book selling sites.
It is. You can get it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Target.com, any indie books, anywhere you buy books. The book is there, and it's I'm tremendously proud and excited to have it out there. And it's currently a number one new release in its category. So really excited. There's a need for parents to have hope and understanding and guidance. So we're excited to be able to contribute to that conversation.
Well, thank you for all you're doing. I know you're impacting thousands and thousands of lives and everybody at Brain Balance. So thank you for your passion, your love for people, love for these kiddos. You're just doing a great work. Excited about the book too. Everybody, y'all can go to brainbalance.com, right, Dr. Jackson?
You got it. Thank you so much for having me, Dr. Benton. It's been a pleasure.
All right, you bet. Okay, everybody, brainbalance.com is a website where you can go learn more, get Dr. Jackson's book at any online or otherwise bookstore. At Back on Track, A Practical Guide to Help Kids of All Ages Thrive. This show will be archived at veritasmedical.com, so y'all get there, and on Apple iTunes, You're the Cure. So send this to your friends, your family, your folks at church that you know, they have kids and may need this type of information and need some help with their kiddos. So we will be back next week with another great show. I am Dr. Ben Edwards. You're the Cure.